All right, welcome to Season 2, Episode 14, also known as Episode 46 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Hugh, and joining me is someone who is very sorry for telling everyone to use NES cleaning carts to treat infectious disease, Rob.
Yeah, apparently that doesn't work. Blowing on it doesn't work either, like NES cartridges. So,
but yeah, and you might make the NES sick.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So what's been going on?
Not a ton. I've not been playing a ton of retro games, but I did get a weird email from Amazon saying that the TurboGrafx 16 Mini is now arriving January 1st, 2021, which, did I say January 1st? January 5th, 2021, they told me.
Yeah, I got my email for the 21st of 2021.
Yeah. Yeah, just say you have no idea. I would prefer that as an email. I know this thing exists because allegedly they have it in Japan already.
Well, people in America have been getting them already. Like, people are putting, I think they are, because they're getting the TurboGrafx versions, not the PC Engine version, so.
Oh, I've not seen reviews of the TurboGrafx version yet. I didn't realize people actually got one.
I can't wait to talk about it more in this show when we get them, because I've watched some of those reviews. This thing's nice. Their interface is nice. I don't like giving Konami credit, but you kind of got to. They did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't do anything. They hired people that did a great job.
Hey, sometimes it's all it takes.
Yeah, yeah. Really, that's what Atari needs to do. Well, and also pay them.
Yeah, and get out of Bitcoin or whatever. Yeah,
and gambling. Yeah, not their Bitcoin. Was it Bitcoin Casino? What are they doing? We just talked about this.
It's called like Atari Bit or something. Atari Token? I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's just say I did not give them my money. How about that?
Good.
Other than the pre-order of the, yeah.
Of yes. So what about you?
I'm still working a lot, but I've been trying to sneak in some late night gaming. And so just stuff I could dive in and out of. So like Atari stuff on Steam, like, or I guess old collection stuff on Steam, like, you know, your Galagas and Dig Dugs of the world. Little bit of Mario Kart Deluxe, try to show my son how to play it. He's just a little bit too young for it, but that's really about it. Yeah, just at my house still. But video games.
Yeah, video games. Lots of time to play video games, man. I've certainly been playing a lot of video games, but mostly on PS4. Did I mention I played Panzer Dragoon in the past week?
No, you didn't.
Yeah, so I was thinking about whether or not to get the Panzer Dragoon remake. And I'm like, well, do I even like Panzer Dragoon very much? So
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I fired it up. And actually, you know what? It was fun, but I forgot, like the stages are fun. And then you get to the boss fights. And, like, the bosses just take so much gun power to defeat. They're not like Mario 3 boss, where it's like, okay, you jump on this guy three times and then he dies, right? These Panzer Dragoon bosses, you are shooting like hundreds, if not a thousand, you know, laser blasts directly into their face. Have you played that in a while?
Not in a long time, no.
Yeah, the boss fights are much more long than you remember.
Is this like a remastered one?
No, this is on Sega Saturn using a Sega Saturn controller.
Okay.
So the remastered version, unless they made the boss fights like a lot shorter, I'm not sure. I think today is the last day they're taking pre-orders on it. So I guess that will ultimately... I guess if I just sort of forget about it for a couple more hours, then I won't buy the remake.
Or but if you keep drinking and get on your phone and...
but the actual stages, like the flying around and shooting enemies, like that part's really fun. It's a kind of a Space Terrier-like game, except, you know, you've got enemies coming from all 360 directions. And I played through the first three stages. There's some really... Like, I actually think the graphics held up better than I thought they would. Like, I think Saturn games generally don't age real well.
Mm-hmm.
But, Panzer Dragoon looked pretty good. I think it still looked good. The enemies looked good. Played really well. I was using the Retrobit Sega Saturn Repro controller.
Yep, I love those.
Yeah, and it was just like playing it in 1995, really.
Except wirelessly, right?
Oh, no, I use the wired controller.
Yeah.
That was fun. So I played that in the past week, and been trying to get my youngest kid to learn how to play Bust a Move.
That's a difficult game. How old is your youngest?
Well, she's almost 12, so I think she can handle Bust a Move by now.
Yeah.
Because it's also a two-player game. And then, like a lot of families, Wii Sports has come out of the closet here.
I'm debating what's the new one? The Ring Fit. I'm debating it.
It's sold out everywhere.
I know.
Because my wife asked about getting that, because she thought that would be a good game to get through the next couple weeks. Really, because it's too cold to go outside. And you can't exercise outside right now either here.
I hear it's a good, there's a podcast I listen to where one of them uses it a lot, and they're actually professional, video game review people.
Oh, okay, opposite of us.
Yeah, and he actually really likes it, says it did its job, so hey.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I probably would buy one if it wasn't sold out everywhere. I guess I haven't been to Target in a couple of weeks, but part of the new restrictions here in Illinois is, they're saying you're supposed to wear face coverings if you go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And all I have is a Friday the 13th Halloween mask.
That counts.
Yeah, what if I put that on with a hoodie and just put the whole, the hood over my head and the mask on? I have a ski mask that I use to shovel snow.
Maybe I'll duct tape a Virtual Boy to my head.
Yeah, it's the mouth you're supposed to cover.
No, I know. That's the ironic part.
Oh, you put the Virtual Boy over the mouth. I think you'd suffocate. The ski mask, I would be hot, but I could still breathe. So that would certainly make my next trip to Target interesting. Because again, just 6 months ago, Target security would have chased me out if I showed up in a ski mask.
But now they require it. Yeah.
Right now, must have.
Times have changed.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, and the other thing about shopping is, so I've been to Target in a couple of weeks. I know people love my Target stores. So I was there 2 weeks ago to pick up a couple, because I have kids. So if you have kids, you run out of milk and bread all the time, right?
Oh yeah.
So I was there, and it was a lot of Instacart shoppers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a group of them of Instacart shoppers, and I swear to you, it was the entire cast of Tiger King.
Of what?
Yeah, every one of them looked like one of the people from the Tiger King show. Have you seen Tiger King?
Yeah, I've seen it.
I assume everybody's seen it. Yeah, I was just amazed at how close this group was to the entire cast of Tiger King. All right, so now that everyone stopped listening, you want to get on to the news?
Sure, absolutely, and we're starting out with a bang here. Super Mario Odyssey 64 mod brings Odyssey's levels and mechanics to Mario 64, including transformations.
So
did you watch this video?
Wait, so which one of these games are they hacking?
So it's Mario 64's engine, mm-hmm, and everything, but it's Mario Odyssey.
But with the Mario Odyssey levels, I see.
And music, and this is incredible. And by the way, I emailed this guy to see if he'd come on his show, and mm-hmm, he didn't write back yet.
Yeah, he can tell us about the takedown letter he gets from Nintendo.
But he's made a ton of, pretty much every mod for Mario 64 we've talked about, he's made. This is what he does.
Okay.
And listeners, please watch this video. It's crazy. The music in Mario Odyssey is pretty complex, and it's perfect in this. And it's obviously, the Nintendo 64's wavetable and stuff like that. It's just, this thing blew me away. And the fact that he got the mechanics right in this, they're a bit chunky, but this is crazy. How many people do you think worked on Mario Odyssey?
200.
30, 1,000, 200, yeah.
200, yeah.
This is one guy that built it in Mario 64. Just insane. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
This is my new hero, I think. Yeah, so definitely check this out, and hopefully one day he's on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good. So let's see, a little bit of sad news. I suppose everyone who has taken computer science is familiar with Conway's Game of Life. Unfortunately, the creator of Conway's Game of Life, John Conway, passed away from COVID-19 in the past week. So
yeah,
it's things like this. Again, we talked a little bit about you can be bummed about having to stay at home and everything being closed, but you know this is part of the reason why we're doing this. But yeah, unfortunately, he contracted COVID-19, passed away, and over here on Ars Technica, they have a nice write-up about his life. He was actually not, it sounds like he was not particularly fond of being associated with Conway's Game of Life, because he had a very long career after developing that. So, I can understand that. Like, you don't want to be remembered for just one thing, obviously. And, if you're a computer science major, you probably had to program some version of this at some point.
Yeah. Which, even though I'm a programmer, I did not take a computer class in other than like typing.
Have you done a Conway's Game of Life implementation
no,
before?
No, I have not. I feel like such a hack now.
Mm-hmm. It's not a bad way to learn a new language.
Mm-hmm.
Because you learn about like arrays, I guess.
Yeah.
All right.
Sad news.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, you should just. You are learning like Google Go or something. You should just write Game of Life in it. let's see. In the past week, I found out about a new project, and they just had a new release called Apple II Disk Browser. So this is a large app. It's on GitHub, so you have all the source code at your disposal, and you feed it a Apple ROM image, and then it. It gives you a visual graph of the disk layout, shows you everything on the disk, identifies it. He has like, if you look through the source code, he's got like all these like custom, like lots of custom code for like disks by certain manufacturers. Like if you put in like an Infocom game or something, then it like has different information and looks a little bit different than if it's, you know, some other game. It's actually a pretty powerful tool. I don't know if you got a chance to look at this.
Oh yeah. It shows different pictures and stuff that it finds. Yeah, this thing's incredible.
Yeah.
And it works on almost every operating system.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's a Java-based program, so it runs on basically everything, of course.
Yeah.
The only small issue is I downloaded it, and like he just rebuilt it in like the latest version of Java. And if you're on Linux, you have to it's just a hassle because after version 11, there's not installers on the Ubuntu repository. I don't know, it's some licensing thing. This is the kind of stuff I probably should know, but I actually don't know the specifics of why that happened.
Something with Oracle.
Something licensing, but you can still download and install it anyways. There's really no restrictions on it, so it's still a free and open language.
This abandoned computer store is a time capsule in early 2000s tech.
So yeah, this is out on vice.com, and this comes to us from what they describe as a small Oklahoma city. And it's a store that I guess closed up around, they say the early 2000s, but looking at the merchandise, they might be a little generous in that estimate.
Yeah, this looks more 90s.
It does, but you don't know how much... I guess 2000 and 1990 are pretty hard to tell apart. 2000 and like 1998 are hard to tell apart, I mean.
Yeah, it's like after 2001 where things started changing a little bit.
Yeah. And they didn't get to go in the store. They just have photos through the windows.
And I want to live there.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, a bunch of CRT monitors and the cow boxes from Gateway 2000. What else we got here?
Yeah, see, they have computers with 5 1/4 inch drives still, which is why I'm like, ooh, 2000, that was pretty much dead by then. And then they have like Spectrum 16 audio cards. a lot of like sun-bleached copies of Norton Utilities. So it's quite a mix mash, but it looks older than 2000s to me, is really all I'm saying. And I guess they must have gone out of business 20 some years ago, and whoever owns the lot, you know, whoever owns the building, didn't find a replacement, didn't throw their stuff out. Whatever.
Yeah, I guess there was an auction, or there's gonna be an auction, something like that. But, yeah, I want to live there. In strange news, the Myst TV series will be written by X-Men First Class writer Ashley Edward Miller. Now, first part of that is, there's going to be a Myst TV series?
Right. I was going to say, you buried the lead a little bit with that. So yeah, a Myst TV series. I guess it must be like Lost?
I don't know. So this person produced Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which was a TV show, which I heard was one of the best things that came out of the Terminator universe.
Okay. He also co-wrote Agent Cody Banks.
Well, there you go. Isn't that like a kid's thing?
Yeah, it's with the guy that was in Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, geez.
But he's done other stuff. So also worked on Andromeda and Fringe.
Yes, and I loved at least the first two seasons of Fringe. I loved those.
Yeah, I have no doubt he's perfectly qualified to write the Myst show.
And so, yeah, this article makes a good point that Myst canon spans over 10,000 years. So this could really go anywhere. So does it say what it's going to be on? Like, is this a Netflix thing? I haven't read this story in like 2 weeks or whenever it came out. Well, anyway, yeah, please write us if you're interested. If you actually would be interested in a Myst TV show. Now, I'm going to watch it just because it's video gamey, but I'm not sure this is something we needed.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I think it. I can only see a show sort of in the format of Lost working for Myst.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we'll see. Like, Myst is kind of just one protagonist. It's just the player, and then there aren't really, like, other characters in the main game.
And I never played any of the sequels. So I don't know. I don't know all the lore. Yeah. Have you ever endgamed Myst? Have you ever rolled credits on it?
No.
I don't think I have either.
No. It's one of those games, I guess, if you know what you're doing, you can win it in like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I guess I could look at an FAQ and just do, a power through. But I don't know what fun that is. I think the appeal of Myst for me was just looking at the scenery.
Yeah, it'd be better just to watch someone play Myst on YouTube. while you do something else.
A remaster of Star Wars Episode I Racer coming to Switch and PS4. Now, I have Star Wars 1 Racer on PS4 already. This is something different.
Yeah, it's upgraded graphics and everything. So what you have is just a port. This is going to be new textures and stuff like that.
All right. Well, that sounds good.
Yeah, and we've got to be, out of all the podcasts in the world, we have got to mention this game more than them, right?
Yeah.
We talk about this game probably every other episode.
Yeah, well, it's a really good Star Wars game, and I don't think it gets enough credit.
It's a really strange racing game. Like, it feels more like Wave Race than it does like a car racer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a bit more fluid and So looking forward to that. I hope it's not too expensive. Coming out May 12th, which is pretty soon.
Yeah, if it's on Switch, it'll be like $60 for a couple months and then 30, and then like one day it'll be 4th of July and you'll log in and it'll be like 14 cents.
Yes. All right.
Miyamoto congratulates HAL Laboratory on turning 40.
Yeah, so HAL Lab was where part of the Nintendo, where Donkey Kong, Pinball, Gorf, what else? 3D Hot Rally, Kirby, and I guess the original incarnation of Smash Bros. All developed there. So it's just kind of a think tank of game developers within Nintendo. And it's where Miyamoto started. And I guess he still runs or is, advises at least.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think... Yeah, I don't think he ever worked at HAL. I think he worked with them heavily in their early days. Okay. And obviously the former president, Satoru Iwata, was came from HAL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So this is a nice article. Translation from Miyamoto. Just little blurbs from him talking about it. And yeah, 40 years. Wow. Let's see. And that was on Nintendo Life.
Yes. And I think sticking with Nintendo Life,
yeah,
if you're into homebrew development, there is now a version of BASIC, Smile BASIC 4, for the Nintendo Switch. Not super retro, except the games being demoed are all very retro-looking games.
This is insane. And this is a real product coming out. I guess it was going to come out on 3DS, but... or... There was an old version of it, mm-hmm. But yeah, you can use a USB keyboard and mouse with your Switch and program some BASIC. You can learn to code on your Switch. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they're going to have Labo support for this. That would be neat.
It would be something, that's for sure. apparently, there is also a 3DS version that sounds like you might get when you buy the Switch version.
Oh, huh. Wow.
Now, the page for it on the Nintendo site here really needs a good, solid grammar check.
I've only skimmed this. Is it pretty bad?
It's bad. Guide for Program Beginners is included.
Oh. Huh.
So there you go.
Yeah.
there was another really bad one here. Where is it here? For checking. Technical samples for checking execution results for each command. It's not terrible. Not good either.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to try that out. Kansas Fest 2020 will be virtual. So if you've been listening to this podcast, it's something we talk about every once in a while. We love Kansas Fest. It's the annual Apple II Fest that's been going on forever. And they're not going to let this stop them. So for $20, you can reserve a... virtual seat, so you know you get a login password. We're going to try to get an interview for this one too. We had a Kansas Fest interview about this time last year, and yeah, trying to schedule that now to kind of see how this will go down. And if our listeners have never watched on YouTube Kansas Fest, there's so many great projects that we have talked about, a lot of them on here, and it might be one of the coolest and like nerdiest, and in my book, nerdiest cool, one of the coolest festivals ever. So, yeah, this is neat.
We'll still get you a pin and t-shirt, but won't be picking up in person. And it's July 24th and 25th. And yeah, I mean, I kind of get the feeling like even as, you know, we start to go back to some semblance of normal here in the country, and every country on earth is going through this, so it's not just an American thing. I still think we're going to probably have a year of no major festivals or gatherings.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, at least till next spring, probably. But Kansas Fest is usually 5 days, which is crazy. 5 days every year since whenever it started, when Apple II was a new thing. 5 days, and it's always packed with panels and people showing new stuff and new games and new things you had no idea the Apple II can do. Just incredible stuff, incredible people.
Although I guess with like everything else being canceled, something like Kansas Fest could maybe like lease out the biggest stadium in Kansas. I don't know what that is. so I don't know the name. And then you could actually keep everybody like 6 to 8 feet apart.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
I wonder if, yeah. Like, I know obviously I'm bummed about Midwest Gaming Classic being closed. There's no way you could do that with and keep people 6 feet apart. You can't keep people 6 inches apart at that event. It's so busy. But if they just had like all of downtown Chicago to run it. All right. I can dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lynx 2020 programming competition.
I love this.
I think last year we talked about the results of this. I don't remember if we talked about when the competition started. I don't know. Who knows? But it's starting. Brought to you by Atari Gamer and Retro HQ.
And the theme this time around is the future. Mm-hmm. So an idea, they post like, you know, you could do any, whatever the future means for you, but their kind of idea is, you know, what you think 2040 would be like in the 1990s. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Your program has to be done. You can't submit anything that you don't personally consider finished. And
but you have until August 15th.
Yes. Please, at least one of our listeners, please do this.
Yeah, if you kind of look at this competition, there's maybe a smallish group of people who tend to dominate it. So I think you get the same maybe 5 or 6 participants every year. But my understanding is like the core programming isn't drastically different than doing NES programming.
Huh.
Obviously, wow, it's more powerful, but it's the same CPU. I think if you could do NES programming, maybe like, you know, having to learn a new sound chip might be the hardest part.
It's just, I couldn't imagine getting a game done that fast. You know, August isn't that far away, and coding that much assembly could take a while. Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, we got to remember to get the results for that. This one I posted on 8BitDo. 8BitDo released a new TurboGrafx PC Engine wireless controller, which looks beautiful, except... Do you want to say it or you want me to say it?
Oh, hold on. I didn't look at the price yet. Go ahead.
No, it's not the price.
Okay.
It has 4 buttons.
Sure. Why not?
Now, I can't figure out... Now, it looks exactly like a TurboGrafx and a PC Engine mm-hmm. and in a Core Graphics controller, except it has 4 buttons and both of them say 2 and 1 above them.
Yeah, so one's rapid fire, right?
That's what I'm assuming, but I can't find that anywhere. So,
Oh, okay.
So this is to use with your PC Engine Mini, your TurboGrafx Mini, or it works on a Switch.
Hold on. Special features, turbo function.
But still, it doesn't say different buttons that weren't on the original for turbo. Uh-huh. Like, why couldn't they just put the little
switches? Just a bullet point saying different buttons?
Yes, yes.
That's all you want. Just to
That's
say
all I want.
Different buttons.
Different buttons, not the switches.
Okay. It's $24.99. Doesn't sound too terrible.
No, not too bad.
And this will work with the TurboGrafx 16 Mini that may or may not come out?
Yes, and the Switch. Mm-hmm. So you could play it on our Game of the Week this week.
I don't think I have 8-bit Doe controllers. How are those?
They're fantastic.
All right.
I have 3 of them, and they are all flawless. You know, I have the one for the Super NES Classic, and I have the Sega Saturn one, and the Genesis one. The SNES Plus I have. Yeah.
So we'll talk about those use later. This wirelessly with the TurboGrafx Mini.
Yes.
All right. Maybe I will just... I actually think the Core Edition is the best looking one.
Yeah. It kind of looks like the Turbo Duo controller.
Kind of does. Well, here, I will do pre-order add to cart. Hold on. How do you do that? Amazon.
All right. That sums up our news for the week. And I do have to say, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 news items we've already saved for next week.
I'm going to start drinking now. All right, so what are we talking about?
We are talking about console controllers. So Hugh and I emailed a few times this week saying, like, what should we should do a topic this week? Let's not do an interview.
Yeah, well, we tried to do an interview, but it kind of fell through.
Well, yeah, I have a lot of emails out there for interviews right now. And I promise, listeners, we're going to get back to some big topics soon. There's this one thing at work I need to get done before I could really dive into some stuff for this podcast.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And you can work on getting Kanye West on the show to talk about the Turtle graphics.
Yes, or, yeah, there's some big ones, yeah. Miyamoto, I don't know, with a translator.
Yeah, that's really going to happen.
Or without a translator.
Even better.
That could be hilarious. That would
be tons of fun.
But so, we thought, what could we talk about this episode? And I actually think it was right after I saw this 8-bit-do TurboGrafx wireless controller that I thought, you know, let's talk about controllers. What's our favorite original controllers? What's our favorite modern controllers to use for retro gaming now? And maybe a few honorable mentions, stuff like that. So you want to start? You want me to start?
Why don't you start? Because I put mine together at the last minute.
Okay. So I don't know if it's nostalgia or just I have small hands or something, but the original NES controllers, they just feel right to me. So I put that as my number one favorite controller. It seems like a cop-out, but it just... something happens where I just play great with that controller. You could hand me another 2-button controller and it just never feels right. You know, the TurboGrafx one was a close second for me because of it almost felt just like an upgraded NES controller with the turbo functionality. But I just disliked how you could accidentally press start and select at the same time and reboot your system.
Oh, yeah, that was sweet.
Just not cool at all. And the Neo Geo stick, the original stick, it's the first thing that felt professional. It was that controller that no one played as a kid because no one was rich. And yeah, I have one now because I could buy one used on eBay and they just feel so great. And those were my favorite original controllers. I'll do some honorable mentions later. How about you?
Yeah, so original controllers. By the way, I mean, I do disagree on the Nintendo controller because, like, I thought it was a great controller until I got the revised version of the NES that came with the Wishbone controller. Mm. And then you mm-hmm. will never go back to the rectangular Nintendo controller.
Okay.
Once you use that. You know, so the problem is I'm a little bit on the tall side. Like, I'm not, like, Shaquille O'Neal or anything, but I'm a little tall. And if you're tall, you have kind of big hands, and most controllers are just garbage for you. All right. really, like most of the world is not designed for people over 6 feet tall. I don't expect people to have pity on me. There's lots of great things about being over 6 feet tall. But they do not include using video game controllers. They definitely don't include airplanes. And they don't include hotel showers, which are literally the worst thing on earth if you're over 6 feet tall. you never have to think about this if you're not, because
no,
you know, the idea of getting a shower and the shower is like shorter than you are. So I tend to buy every system I have, I tend to buy joysticks, large joysticks, just so I don't like get carpal tunnel faster than I already am.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones I use the most, NES Advantage, I know a lot of people don't like it. I think it's a great controller. Used it for everything when I played on the NES. I had the NES Advantage for. Similar size is the ASCII fighter stick, which they make for Super Nintendo and Genesis. I only have the Super Nintendo version. Then I have the giant Super Nintendo joystick that I know we don't actually show this on YouTube. But here, you can... So you can tell... let's see, where's my, I lost my window. There it is. So you can tell the listeners, how would you describe the size of this joystick?
It's humongous. It looks like you built it yourself. It's so big.
Yes. And it's very clicky. See? So it's...
yeah, it looks like something you would make at home with real stick like Leaf controllers. Yeah.
Yeah. It's by KBM. So I looked it up just to see the history on this. Apparently, I got this on clearance at the video game store. So like it was, it came in and it was just like in a generic white box that said joystick. Like there, it was the most generic thing ever. And it was, I don't know, like $50 when it came in. And then just one day, it was like, you got to get rid of those joysticks right away for like 99 cents. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll buy one of those. Why not? Giant joystick, right?
Yeah.
And then looking into it, it seems like these guys, KBM, like ripped off this joystick from another company. And there must have been a lawsuit and they couldn't sell it anymore. So I think that's how I got it so cheap.
That looks really nice. It really looks like a modern fighting stick.
Yeah, it is a awesome joystick. And I again use it. I even use it for like Super Metroid and Zelda.
Huh.
It's great.
Wow. Going back to ASCII, is ASCII still a company? I haven't heard that name in a long time.
I don't think so. I don't know. They have, nope, wait a second. I have no idea.
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Let's say no.
Our listeners can correct us.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing anything past really the PlayStation era from them. But they made great controllers, man.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
I'm trying to find the company history here. Due to their success in the market, established March 2000... In March 2002, they ceased to distribute and publish video games. And I assume that includes joysticks too. Absorbed by MediaWorks, becoming a subsidiary of Kadokawa, who does make games. So that means they're just not making hardware anymore.
Oh, I forgot about this. They made that GameCube controller for Phantasy Star Online that had the built-in keyboard in the middle.
That sounds like the company you would hire to do that. Yes.
That's insane.
But yeah, and then they also made like D-pads that are really good too. They were just a really good controller company. And then last but not least, the Sega Genesis 6-button arcade stick.
Yeah, that's a fantastic one. I got one of those. And you could still, on eBay, you could still find old new stock of those. And it's kind of nice to have one laying around in case yours breaks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they have a 3-button one also, but I don't know why you'd want that.
No, no. Okay. So, my favorite modern for retro gaming, which I almost exclusively go through RetroArch or just MAME directly. But I'm going to start with the Switch. I love the Nintendo controllers, the NES and the SNES controllers for the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like the original. There is no lag that I can tell. And, yeah, they're just, can't say enough good things about them. When I do RetroArch, I, go between 3 different, controllers. My most used is the Sony DualShock 4. It just works with so many things. It's my go-to controller. And, I got for like $13 on Amazon, I got a faster, Bluetooth adapter for my desktop, so it really speeds that up. I think I talked about that on a previous episode. And my other one is an 8-bit DO SNES 30 Pro. And what that is a controller that looks like an SNES controller with dual analog sticks, but also with a bigger grip that kind of feels like a PS3 or PS4 controller.
Mm-hmm.
What a fantastic controller. And the other one that I didn't put on here, the close third, is I think it's either RetroBit or 8-bit DO. It's too far away for me to grab right now, but the Saturn-looking controller that's 2.4 gigahertz wireless. It's also a great one. So if you're looking to do some maiming or some retro arching, any of those controllers I recommend, but there are so many retro games on the Switch that it might be good just to pick up a Switch and one of the NES branded controllers Or you could get the new TurboGrafx 16 wireless controller for your Switch. How about you?
Yeah, so I don't like most modern controllers for classic systems. That was the whole point of my mini rant that I wrote in the notes here. So I do like the Wii Classic controller. Did you ever have one of those?
I have one.
The one that's shaped like the Wishbone controller I just professed my love of for.
I have what I'm showing you in my camera. Can you see that?
Hold on. I have to actually open that window again because I have the show notes open. That is not the one I'm thinking of. That is the second variant, not the Wishbone variant.
Okay.
I have one of those too. For some two-player
games. Straight from Japan.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, the one I'm talking about is really like the controller that's shipped with the redesigned NES. But with more buttons.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I like that one a lot. I don't know if that counts as...
Well, you would use that in the virtual store, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I bought it for.
Yeah.
So it's really great for that. And otherwise, I wrote USB adapters.
Yes.
So I have Nintendo 64, PS1, and Super Nintendo USB adapters that I use whenever I'm playing emulators.
So I haven't done that before. So when you do that, can you plug different controllers in to, you know, the USB port, mm-hmm. and then have your emulator, is it already mapped for you? Are the buttons mapped instantly?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, they're mapped to stuff, but then you usually have to go in and define them. Like, some emulators detect the analog stick on the Nintendo 64 just fine. The D-pad, they usually don't detect as a D-pad. They detect it as four buttons. So then you have to map them. For SNES controller, not really a problem. PlayStation, again, it's hit or miss what they're going to do with the analog sticks on there. Mm-hmm. Like, see, here's my Nintendo, beautiful Super Nintendo controller USB adapter, so I can use the giant joystick with the computer if I'm so inclined.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for MAME, I should really use that more. It seems kind of silly not using that for MAME.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
The Nintendo 64 controller is really my go-to one. Because I can actually hold it. I can actually use the analog stick like comfortably. Like, the thing most people complain about is actually really... I can actually use it on here.
I like the analog stick on the N64, but that controller gets a lot of hate. And maybe even from me, but it's fine. I did put some worst controller mentions in here.
Right.
Of course, the Atari 5200. And probably a controversial one. Listeners, please write in. Intellivision. I never liked it.
I would have argued with you. I used to like the Intellivision controller a lot. And it's still good for certain types of games. But, yeah, you know, I was playing... my youngest kid, we were playing some Intellivision recently. And, I'm like, this controller is really uncomfortable and awkward.
Yes. Mushy and... Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah.
I was like, yeah... You know what? This wasn't a good controller after all.
Even as a kid, and I mean a young kid, I would play Intellivision a lot with my cousin, and I would think to myself, if I had a different controller, I would be better at this. Mm-hmm. And this is when I was, 8 years old or something, But the 52 controller has to be the all-time worst controller ever, right?
Fifty two hundred. Yeah. I haven't really used it a lot. Maybe once or twice. Mostly because it's hard to find working ones. So I guess it must win by default then.
Yes. Well, they break very easily.
Yeah. but go back to the Intellivision controller real quick. There are a lot of games on that system that just wouldn't work though without the numeric pad. So I mean, it lets you do a lot of things that you couldn't do on like the 2600.
And it has the cool overlays you could put on it and stuff. I did want to mention, and this could be for your giant hands also, that an honorable mention of the Dreamcast controller, simply because I thought it was a good design other than where the wire comes out and the VMU.
Yeah, I got to buy a USB adapter for that, because I would definitely use a Dreamcast controller with some games.
Yeah. Oh, well, I used to use it for SNES stuff a lot when I was just emulating on my Dreamcast. And that actually felt pretty good. I mean, the emulation wasn't great, but controller felt good. But should we, you have any closing thoughts on this random controller topic?
Not, no, I don't. I mean, like I said, I have a few favorites. Generally, anytime I get a system, like, first thing I do is try and find a larger controller. Even with the Saturn, I typically just use the giant, and it's the worst. I like the giant Saturn controller is really awful. Like, it's a bad controller, but it's really big. Have you used the giant Saturn controller?
I think I have one.
The one that was like, you would get a copy of it with Nights into Dreams.
It was called like the 3D something, like maybe. Yeah. I have one of those in a box somewhere.
Yeah. I have, I know it's going to sound like a crazy person, but I have four of those in box. You never know when I'm going to need four Saturn controllers.
You never know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a four-player adapter for the Saturn, so. I think I thought I was going to play a lot more Saturn than I actually did, so I wanted to make sure I had a good stash of original controllers for when I wore out my first controller playing so much Saturn, I guess.
We should get more Saturn games on this podcast.
Yeah, we should. I mean, I know I talked about Panzer Dragoon a little bit, which, again, I do really enjoy, but I would have a hard time buying it again, at full price right now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of games, should we get into some game club?
Yes. Why don't you start with Saint Dragon? Also, the name of a death metal album, it sounds like.
I know, it's like the best band name ever. So, Saint Dragon is a horizontal scrolling shooter made by Jellico. Well, produced by Jellico, made by NMK, who they're not linked very well in Wikipedia, but they made a few other shooters. They don't have that many games under their belt. Jellico published this, and it was in the arcade, Atari ST, the Spectrum, PC Engine, yada, yada, yada. You play as a cyborg, Saint Dragon, who has rebelled against the tyrannical monster cyborg army. So there's that. And I have to say, I really enjoyed this game. I picked this because it was available on the Switch, and it was really cheap. And it wasn't a game I ever played before. And I'm sure it's like, $1,000 on PC Engine or something. But on the Switch, you could play the arcade version or the home port version. You could pick different skill levels. And what makes this game different is you play this dragon-looking robot thing. It looks almost more like a snake, like it's really just a dragon head with a tail. And your tail is invincible. And whichever way you go, the tail goes the opposite direction, obviously, because it's kind of following you. And when you stop, it stops too. So the screen's still going, and you can use it to, if you hit an enemy with it, it causes them damage. If an enemy hits it, it causes you no damage. So it's invincible. And that just really adds a great mechanic to this game that I never played before and never really experienced anything like it. Like, I guess the closest thing I could think of was the Ooze, which is not even a side-scrolling shooter. It feels a lot like R-Type, except with this mechanic. And it's a very difficult game. I got a little bit frustrated with it. I didn't get very far. I only got to the second boss, which is not far at all. You could watch a long play of it on YouTube for the PC Engine port, and it's only half an hour long. I played the arcade part the arcade port of this on the Switch. I didn't have time to really dive into anything else other than watch this long play and look at the Spectrum version. The Spectrum port of it was pretty impressive, and I'm known on this podcast for kind of dumping on the Spectrum's graphics, but they did a good job with what they had with it. So I would definitely give this game a you should probably check it out rating, whether you emulate it or get it on Switch. And yeah, did you get a chance to look at this one at all?
So yeah, I played the PC Engine version. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it. I'm not usually huge on shooters, and no, I didn't last like a really, really long time or anything. But yeah, it was a fun game. Definitely enjoyed it. I thought it reminded me a lot of R-Type.
Yes. I liked how if you died and had to start over, I think it only, I could be remembering this wrong. I think it only takes away one of your power-ups. So just like an R-Type or, I don't know, Salamander or something like that, you keep getting different power-ups and they kind of add to each other and compound. If you die, they don't take them all away, which really helps. How far did you get?
Only through the first stage.
It's hard, right?
It is.
If this was released for the Genesis in America, I think it would have been really popular.
Yeah, I think it would have been.
It felt like a Genesis game.
Some of the graphics reminded me a little bit of Target Earth. Have you played that?
No.
So yeah, Target Earth was a, since you mentioned Genesis, that came back in my mind. So that was a Genesis shooter. Fairly early. Maybe 1990 release.
Huh. Genesis. There we go. Okay.
It's not, I mean, it's similar only in like sort of color palette and background graphics.
Okay.
So that's what we wanted to talk about at some point. It's been a while since I played that. And
oh wow, yeah, this game looks cool. It looks like a Thexter type thing.
And I think I own a card of this.
I think we've talked about this before. I think I brought up Thexter and you brought up this game, or vice versa. I think we've had this conversation.
Yeah, I think so. It's just a shooter I played quite a bit on the Genesis.
Yeah, this looks cool. But anyway, Saint Dragon, I definitely give it a thumbs up. Great graphics, great gameplay. If you're up for a challenge, this is definitely it. I like the music too. The first level has like some kind of fun jazzy music mm-hmm. going on. So, Smash TV.
Yeah. So this is another game I played with one of my kids this week. Actually, my youngest kid. Okay. Probably not a good idea. But we're going through a lot of like old games lately, just because we have a lot of free time. And I had popped in the Midway Arcade Treasures collection into the GameCube. And we did a complete playthrough of Smash TV. Because when you have unlimited credits, why not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course...
How long did that take you?
About an hour, maybe.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. There's only three stages.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm against an arcade game. How you can't expect it to be that long. Mm-hmm. So it's GameCube is a good format for it because you have dual analog sticks on the system. Some of the other ports, you know, Super Nintendo does a good job with the controls. Genesis, maybe mm-hmm. not quite as much. But just your basic overhead kind of Robotron style shooter, but with way more enemies and, you know, a kind of Running Man inspired plot where you're winning like toasters and VCRs and in exchange for massacring thousands of people.
I think I got I won a boat or something last time I played.
Yeah, well, there's a car, there's a vacation.
Jet, maybe?
There's like European vacation, car, toaster, VCR, home version of Smash TV.
Yes, so many VCRs, so many.
Maybe a year's supply of rice, something like that, kind of game showy stuff. And then the last boss is like the host of the show, but in robot tank form. If that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so it's just basic fun, and you should never use actual quarters to play this because you die a lot.
Yeah, so what port is on the GameCube? Is that
it's the arcade.
Arcade?
You know, it's the arcade, yeah. Okay. It's on the Midway Arcade Treasures collection, so it's just the full arcade version.
Yeah, I played it on MAME. And it was super, super slow. And I forget what I did. No, I played it on Libretro's MAME and it was super slow. Then I just went to regular MAME and it played great. So it must be some setting I have going on there.
Yeah, it has a lot of concurrent sprites. I don't know if that chokes something up somewhere.
I have to look at it. I mean, that shouldn't choke my system like that, but...
No, I'm saying maybe the emulator was choking. You know, maybe the core that it's using to run Smash TV versus what MAME's using, there was some problem. I don't know.
Yeah. But, and then I played on the Nintendo with two controllers, and that's a great port. It's really fun with two controllers. You know, just so if any listener hasn't played it like that, you can use controller one and two, the D-pads, and you hold them on their side, and it's like having two sticks there, really. And if you have the four-player adapter, I forget what that's called, for the NES, then you can have two players, each playing with two controllers. And what a great concept for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they didn't do a bad job at all. The graphics look great. You know, it's nowhere near the arcade. But when I was playing the arcade port, my four-year-old came down here. And I was like, it's Smash TV. It's fine if he sees it. And I had not played it in a while. And wow, there is a lot of blood in this game.
There is, yeah. Yeah.
I had to just stop it right there. But, yeah, definitely a great pick. Want to tease the new Game Club games?
Yeah, you're picking a good one.
My pick is Dragon's Lair. So you could get it on any system ever if it had a CD-ROM.
Yes, I'm looking at my shelf of Dragon's Lair games that I have here. And I have Sega CD, 3DO, Game Boy Color, and Wii.
Game Boy Color, wow.
That is a very good version of the game.
Wow.
It is not like the, you know, like you would think it was like the NES or Super Nintendo game, where it's just like a totally different game called Dragon's Lair. Or the GameCube version, for that matter, right? GameCube version is a different game with the same title.
Yeah, it's like a side-scroller, right? Or a platform.
Yeah, kind of platformy kind of game. But no, Game Boy Color is Dragon's Lair, and it is actually really good.
Huh, wow. Well, I have it on PS4 and on Steam, so I'm going to play it on one of those. And I'll talk about it then. I thought about playing it because of the whole movie coming out on Netflix for it.
All right, and I mentioned playing some Intellivision recently, mm-hmm. so I'm going to go with Astro Smash.
Good choice.
Yeah, I played a little bit of that too in the past week.
Astro Smash should be a great band name too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and it's a very easy game to play. There's lots of remakes. I think there's still a free version on the Intellivision site. So,
do you need the number pad for this one?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't have to get annoyed by the buttons either, because, you know, the Intellivision buttons are kind of bad for action games, the side buttons. Mm-hmm. It has an auto fire mode.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, listeners, if you played any of these games or any games we talked about or any retro games at all, please email us, email@retrogameclub.net, and we'd really love to hear from you. We got some emails, lots of emails this week.
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of email, so... And I have been drinking, but I will still do my best here. Majors.
We are going to butcher these.
I always butcher them a little bit. So, Majors writes in, says he does enjoy the tangents that we have. So that's good. At least that's one person who doesn't turn off after the first 7 minutes. Mike Tyson's speedrun being dry reminds him of another video series called Cronetendo. By Dr. Sparkle, which is like a chronological rundown of all games released for the system. And he said it's extremely dry and he has fallen asleep while watching. decapping CPUs. We talked about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so the NES PPU, and there are some hackers who decapped it to actually look at the logic and understand how the logic was implemented on it. That's what we talked about, right? You can clip this part. That's what we talked about.
And the TurboGrafx chip.
And the TurboGrafx. I thought we were talking about the TurboGrafx chip.
Then we brought up the PPU at one point.
So there's a website, team-europe.blogspot.com. that also does projects like this and sells multi-carts for various systems, and had even agreed to make a Bandai Supervision cart if he sent him the guts. Nice.
Wow.
We talked about the PC Engine FX forum. He mentioned that it closed up shop due to some drama that he witnessed but did not partake in. And there are now two competing sites, PCEngineFans.com and PCEngine.ProBoards.com. And one of them apparently scraped the old PCFX site, and you can get your old account back. And then Sun Team Paul, who runs the PC Engine Bible, added a forum. So his site is a really good reference, too, by the way, if you've never been to it. And then, of course, Discord. I don't really know what Discord is. But I hear it's a thing people use to talk.
It's IRC.
All right.
And graphical IRC.
All I hear about it is it's like a recruiting tool for hate groups, so I haven't signed up for it yet. I'm sure it does other good things besides that. Then he asked about the large NES joystick and suggests what brand it might be, and I think I already clarified what that is. Games, our previous picks. So yeah, so Doom 64 he never got into because he wasn't interested in Doom to begin with and was never a big Nintendo 64 fan, and watched a YouTube video of Star Trek Final Unity, which is what might be the best way to play that one. And then responding to a social media question about first retro game ever played, the earliest memories he had were playing Super Cobra, Mr. Do, and Atari X&O's Football. And the first console game he was playing is Combat on the VCS. And for new games in retro style, he thinks it was probably Echoes Plus.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for that email, Majors. And we got one from Joe here. Smash TV is a lot of fun. Good blend of ultraviolence and a good sense of humor. And he played Smash TV on the SNES for a few weeks. And yeah, the buttons are a good substitute for the second joystick. And he thinks it's cool how one player can use two controllers on the NES version and have four people, or four controllers with two people playing. Just like I just said, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, he likes it's a spiritual successor to Roboton 2084. And he likes the idea of rescuing hostages instead of gathering presents in Smash TV. I tried the PC Engine port of Saint Dragon. It seems like a good port and a lot of fun. And he loves the idea of the invincible body also and the nice power-ups that you don't lose when... everything I just said. Hey, me and you are on the same wavelength there. He was wondering if we saw the homebrew port of Shinobi for Genesis, which no, I had not, but I had watched this video and this looks fantastic. And it looks like it's still a work in progress because it's beta 3. And it literally looks like the arcade port, but the background scrolls just a little bit slower. That's the only difference. And you wouldn't notice unless they have the video of them, you know, back to back. So, Joe, thank you for that email. We have another one from Odie. Social media question. Few games he keeps coming back to are any of the 2D Mario games, especially Mario World or Contra and Super C, the perfect run and gun perfection, which I would definitely agree also. I have to get back into Super C. It has been so long since I played that game, and I have a friend that really likes that one. In the PS1 era, he keeps going back to Tony Hawk, especially number 2. And a side note, I have a close friend who I grew up with that has a song in Tony Hawk 2.
Oh, wow.
And he's in the Suicide Machines, and they dropped a new album this week. So if you love punk music, check out the new Suicide Machine album. It is fantastic. Yeah, I won't go more into that. But he says his wife and him love Dragon Crawlers, and they'll play through Baldur Gates, Dark Alliance, and Champions of Norrath, which I've never played that one on the PS2.
Yeah, so it's weird. I was going to buy Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance a while ago. Because I thought it was a role-playing game, and then I found out, no, it's like more like a dungeon hack-and-slash game. And I still might go back and get it. It's still... Like, I was really in the mood for, like, another Baldur's Gate game, and this isn't Baldur's Gate, really.
Yeah. So, Odie, thank you for that email.
I'm kind of on the fence. I would probably end up liking it enough to play through.
Yeah, yeah. He's got my attention with it. I wanna at least check out a video of it.
Let's see, Zach, who manages our social media, and that we appreciate greatly because neither of us want to do that. And he's doing a great job. He wrote in because he was very inspired by the games we picked, which is good. Good to hear. Saint Dragon. It's been on his short list of games since he saw the Switch port was released. So this gave him the excuse to buy it, and he was not disappointed. Obviously, you can compare it to R-Type, although he feels that it has a lesser weapon upgrade system because R-Type has a better variety of weapons. But in Saint Dragon, you keep your weapons when you die, which at first he didn't like, but was quickly thankful because the game is extremely difficult.
It's brutal.
Mm-hmm. And then has a checkpoint system instead of just starting right back at the beginning of the stage when you die. Having a checkpoint system instead of just a new life picking up. Yeah, so in R-Type, when you die, you just basically respawn in the spot where you died. Or Saint Dragon, you actually go back to a checkpoint. Yeah, I found the checkpoint wasn't too far off of where I died, but maybe I just died in the same spot a lot. He made it up to the third stage boss before resorting to save state manipulation. Which is fine. He said he died a lot doing it. It's important to not choose game reset because that erases the save state as well. Yeah. And out on social media, he mentioned he linked to the PS4 and Switch stores to buy Saint Dragon. If anyone wants to go do that. We don't get any money for that. He's just encouraging people to buy it.
Yeah.
And then also included a link to the Amiga port on the Internet Archive, which looks great, but wasn't a lot of fun to play. And there's also a CPC Amstrad port that you can play on archive.org. It's a computer I've only ever seen, never used, as far as I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
And Smash TV, he remembers fondly from the arcade and spent a bit of time doing the double fist on the NES version. And again, over on the Internet Archive, you can play the arcade version for free, even with USB controller support. Although you do have to remap all the buttons, of course. Yeah, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
He intended to play all the way through, but got kind of bored after the first boss, which I understand. The game does get repetitive, but there's only three stages, so it's not the worst. So then he watched a long playthrough to find out the game... He said it has four bosses, with the fourth being a reskin of the first. Maybe there are four stages. Maybe I'm wrong here, because the last boss really is just a reskin of the very first boss that you fight. But it's reskinned to be the announcer. But I really thought there were just three stages, but I know on one of the stages, there's like different options for doors you can take. So maybe I like skipped part of the game by accident or something.
Okay.
Yeah. Or I just don't remember that there were four stages, which is equally possible. He said, in terms of graphics, the Super Nintendo port actually looks worse than the Genesis one. And the Amiga port looks great, except for when the characters are moving. Which I found to be true about a lot of Amiga games. As for the question about what retro game do you still repeatedly play, for him it is Resident Evil 4. He played through it four times on the GameCube, and then at least two more times on the Wii. And then recently picked up the Switch port and is playing through it and the bonus content as well. He said it's a nearly perfect game, in his opinion. Yeah, so I should probably play that. Is this sort of Games of Shame time? Like, I have that on both Wii and GameCube, and have not played it. That would be...
Getting remastered soon.
That would be bad. He also brings up a question. Actually, I'm going to rephrase something he wrote into a question about botching your initials after you finish a game. So you get a high score at the arcade and then you accidentally mistype your initials. Have you done that?
Oh, yeah. It's incredibly frustrating. Yes, I have done that. And I have, you know, these arcade cabinets here, and there's a few where my initials are wrong here, where I'm like, oh, my God, I need to beat that high score just to get that out of there.
Yeah, basically, if you want your kids to have their initials in arcade games, make sure their first name starts with the letter A, because that's the one you're most likely to mess up.
Yeah. So going back to the social media question, what are the games you go back to like once a year? The retro games that...
Well, like once a year, I play through EastBook 1 and 2 on the TurboGrafx. Pretty much once a year. And I was going to be doing that now, except I guess I can't. Well, I guess I still can. I was waiting to do it on the new system. And I definitely do that a lot. And I mean, we talked about like games you just kind of go back to just for like a few minutes. But obviously, Resident Evil 4 is a game that you play all the way through. Mm-hmm. I've done like 2 Super Metroid playthroughs in the past 2 years. Which is weird, because I probably went 15 years without playing Super Metroid. And now it's becoming a game that I play like once a year. What about you?
I would say my most go-tos for that kind of stuff, just, you know, feeling at home, being nostalgic, turning off the brain, would be probably the first Bonk's Adventure, DuckTales on NES, Dig Dug, Galaga, definitely a lot of Galaga,
okay.
And Galaga 88. Yeah. I think those are my biggest go-tos. And tell you the truth, Super Mario Brothers.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I probably do, like, I do at least one Legend of Zelda playthrough a year, I'm sure. But for me, that's like an evening. You know, I can play through the game in an hour. I'm not really, like, a speedrunner. But, like, an hour to play through the first quest of Legend of Zelda is pretty... You don't have to be, like, a great player to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, every time I pick up EastBook 1 and 2 to play, which is, again, one of my all-time favorite games, in probably my top three... So I've played through it many, many, many times. It's one of those games where I'm like, oh, I'm going to pick this up and play. And, you know, just to hear the music for a little bit. And then I just end up like playing through the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Now, do you use the password where you start at max level?
No. Okay. No. I've never done that.
Okay. I have almost always done that.
And I should definitely mention Devil's Crush. That's probably the game that I probably play the most out of any game ever. And I don't know why.
Yeah, I've actually played, you know, I always mention, like, on this episode, I probably mentioned, like, 3 or 4 games I played in the past week. But, like, with this whole, like, thing we're doing right now, I've actually been playing a lot more games than I'm letting on. You know, I'm working, like, the number of hours I'm working is probably greater, and I know, like, I'm very fortunate for that, because a lot of people don't have jobs right now, and it's terrible, and that's part of why, we have to figure out, you know, how we move forward from this. But, like, it used to be I'd go into the office at, like, 7:30 in the morning, and I'd leave at 4:30, and now it's, like, I log in at, like, 7:30 in the morning, and I log off at, like, 6:30, right? So you would think I have, like, less time. But no, I just end up like basically firing up a game at that point and just playing games until, you know, 12:30 at night. every day, unfortunately, for better or worse.
I'll get there. It's constant work right now, which again,
I know your work situation is very tough right now. I know you want to
go
into the show, but I understand it's pretty rough.
Yeah, but I'll get there a week or two. Well, 2 or 3. But Jason also writes in. He's usually not fond of games like Smash TV, but he really does like it. And he loves the voices, especially when it says something like bingo and you win, you're winning a toaster or a VCR.
Yeah. my kid did think it's funny when you have like the mountain of toasters at the end of the level.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do with all this? Yeah. Yeah. That's really funny. We had a lot of social media feedback. We'll probably have to,
I can lightning round stuff pretty well, even in my current state. Retro games you repeatedly play. I'm going to skip names because I'm going to butcher some of them. Turtles in Time, who when listener writes in and says they started playing with their 8-year-old. Which is good. That's a good one. Even if they don't know who the turtles are, it's still fun.
Yes.
Willow the arcade game. Oh, that's... I've only barely seen that game. I really want to play that.
Someone else just mentioned it. To me, this is Willow is some people's favorite arcade games, and I don't actually remember playing it.
I saw it like it was like in Aladdin's Castle for a week. It must not have done well at the arcades I hung out at. But I remember it looked really cool, but I never played it because it just wasn't around long.
You know they're making a sequel, right?
To Willow?
Val Kilmer and everyone.
Not with Val Kilmer. I can't talk anymore.
He's apparently in it.
Okay. All right. Well, don't smoke. Alex Kidd in Miracle World, Sonic 2, Sonic 3, Fantasy Zone, Wonder Boy. Obviously a big Sega fan there. Some mentions any Castlevania game. Any. That's a wide spectrum.
But he loves the brutal challenge of them all.
Dynagear.
So does that
gets a vote.
Sorry.
And Robotron Smash TV.
Nice.
Star Luster for the Famicom got a vote. And then games that got like multiple mentions are like Legend of Zelda, Dragon Warrior, Super Metroid, Dig Dug, Galaga, Power Stone 2, Tecmo Bowl, Contra, Super C, more Castlevania, a bunch of Streets of Rage games, more TMNT Arcade, Simpsons Arcade, NES Batman, Mega Man, Double Dragon, Final Fight, Donkey Kong Country, Shinobi, and Mario Bros.
The only one in there I don't get, and hey, this is a whole bunch of my problem and not yours, meaning listeners, is Power Stone 2. I've tried Power Stone a few times, and I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm just not very good at it. There's something about it I don't get, but that's a whole bunch of my problem.
Yeah. Feedback on games. Someone out on Twitter, I guess we featured one comment here. Smash TV is a timeless classic that holds up. Arcade is best, but I have a soft spot for the Super Nintendo version. Bought it at Funco Land in 94 and still have it.
Nice.
Retrobit Alternative Dreamcast Controller. We talked about that.
New one
we sure did, didn't we?
Yeah, the new one coming out.
Let's see, some feedback about how they like how the controller looks. The VMU and triggers were a great idea, but it had problems. The lack of a second analog stick limited it, and there was the bizarre cord placement. This new controller fixes the lack of face buttons. And hopefully the new triggers will be easier on the fingers than they were when playing Marvel versus Capcom on the original controller. And a comment about the Sega traffic safety game. Someone should make a traffic safety game now and release it for free on every platform. It's really needed.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That is very true.
Yeah, and the thing is, we have the technology now, right? I mean, you can make a real, like, Grand Theft Auto has really good driving mechanics. Like, you could make a really awesome traffic safety game.
What about Desert Bus or Desert Simulator?
Desert Bus, Desert Simulator? That one?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I should, I've made both my kids play that before.
How'd they do?
Bored.
Mm-hmm.
They were not impressed.
Well, if any listener has any feedback on any retro anything, please, we'd love to hear from you. And we will butcher your emails as well. Email at retrogameclub.net. Connect with us on Facebook. You could get right to the page by going to facebook.retrogameclub.net and avoid all the pandemic and political stuff going on. Go right to the retro gaming. Or hit us up on Twitter. At RGC Podcast, and I think that's the first time I've ever gotten that right without having to edit it like 7 times.
Nice.
And I think that wraps up Season 2, Episode 14.
Yeah, so thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.